Welcome back to Chevrons, a podcast for the enlisted force. If you're new here, welcome. I'm so happy you're tuning in. I'm Airman First Class Juliet Ahasey, and I'm your host of this podcast that's focused on personal and professional development for all military members across all branches who want to become the best version of themselves. Today, we have our very first Coast Guard guest on the pod, the Command Master Chief at Air Station Cape Cod. If you're unfamiliar with the Coast Guard rank structure, he is the highest enlisted rank in the U.S. Coast Guard, E9, and has lots of experience all over the nation. He enlisted in the Coast Guard as an E1 back in 1997 as a helicopter mechanic and worked his way to where he is today, which is more than inspiring, and we have a great conversation about this. In this episode, we talk about deckplate leadership, his unique leadership style, methods of self-improvement, such as pursuing your education early in your career, how to deal with doubt in difficult people, how not to be afraid to ask for help, and a few other topics that gave me great insight on how to be successful in your career. As this was our first Coast Guard guest, we are still looking for more military members from all different branches to come on our podcast. If you'd like to join us for an episode, please feel free to reach out via email or DM us on social media. And remember to follow along with Chevrons on chevrons.podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And those platforms will be linked in the show notes. Now, without further ado, let's get into the episode. Today, I'm excited and honored to be talking to Air Station Cape Cod's Command Master Chief, Jacob Linder. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so excited.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So you're our very first Coast Guard guest that we've had on Chevron. So I'm so excited to get a different perspective of a high-ranking individual as yourself from a different branch. So
okay.
Our listeners can learn from someone with different experiences.
Right.
So I understand that you're retiring soon.
I am. In 2 weeks from tomorrow, yes.
So exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
How long have you been serving?
A little over 27 years.
Awesome. A long time.
A long time, yes.
Do you mind briefly kind of taking us through your career and the different experiences that you've had so far?
Sure, will do. So in 1997, I chose to join the Coast Guard. I saw a late night TV show on it and said that'd be cool. And 2 weeks later, I was in boot camp. That's kind of my story. I didn't know the Coast Guard had big boats or helicopters at the time. I just kind of went for it. It was great. After that, I went to the Coast Guard Cutter Valiant, which is a 210-foot Coast Guard cutter. We call boats cutters in the Coast Guard. Mm-hmm. And it was there where a helicopter landed, and I saw that and said, that's what I'm going to do. Quick story is a gentleman, he was a second class, Juan Joy was a helicopter crew, and he said, if you put your name on the A school list, which A school, I'm not sure what you call it in the Air Force, but that's where we get our training.
Like a tech school.
Exactly. He said he had a present for me, so sure enough, I did it, and he gave me a flight jacket, and I still have that flight jacket to this day.
Nice.
So about a year after that, I went to Air Station Miami as an airman, which is it was a new program at the time for the Coast Guard, so I was only here for a couple months. Went to my tech school to become an aviation maintenance technician. After that, went back to Air Station Miami, where I did 4.5 years. And that's really where I realized how much I really liked being a mechanic. In the Coast Guard, we're blessed as well. We get to fly on the aircraft we fix. So I really honed my skills as a flight mechanic there. And then after that, went to Air Station San Francisco as an E5. And that was at the point where I really realized that the Coast Guard is what I wanted to do for my career. After that, went back to Miami. Now married to my wife, who is also in the Coast Guard. We went back to Miami for a short stint, and then she got a promotion to officer in charge, to where that took us to, where did we go after that? Humboldt Bay, California. So a lot of the Coast Guard units are very small compared to the Air Force, right?
Yeah.
This one was 3 helos, that's it. So it was just one hangar on a municipal airport. After that, I made chief out of there, went to Corpus Christi, Texas, where I was the maintenance chief, running all maintenance on the H-65 helicopters. Backtrack a little bit, that's the helicopter I was on my entire career until coming here. Then after that, I made senior chief, which is E-8. For a year, I stayed there as the platform manager, taking care of the training, personnel needs, kind of stepped away from maintenance. I told my dad I traded my wrench in for a pin at that point. After that, I went to Port Angeles, Air Station Port Angeles, Washington, where I was the leading chief petty officer, all training, all people, medical readiness, you know, and whatnot. Did that for 3 years till I was blessed to advance to Master Chief Petty Officer. And then when the detailer called, she told me that I was going to Cape Cod, and just truly over the moon and just so excited. So that was 5 years ago. I got here in 2019. And it has been by far the best tour, the best air station I've been at.
Sounds like you've been all over.
I have, yes.
And did you start as an E1? Is that where you started, at E3?
I started at E1. I graduated boot camp as an E2 because I had no college, wasn't a Boy Scout or anything like that. And so after 6 months in the Coast Guard, you can, if you've met some basic quals, you can advance to E3.
So you started at the very bottom.
Started at
the
bottom.
Here you are. And
yes.
It's very impressive. And
Thank
it's
you.
Very inspiring to see just how you've grown.
Thank
and
you.
Just everywhere you've been. So while we're recording this episode, you mentioned the term deck plate leader.
Yes.
In the Air Force, we've never heard of that.
I'm sure
it's a Coast Guard term.
Yes.
Can you kind of talk a little bit about what that is?
Sure. So a deck plate on a Coast Guard cutter or boat, and it's used in the Navy as well, is the very bottom of the ship is, the ribs and part of the hull. So there's the metal diamond plate or deck plate at the bottom, mm-hmm. and that's where the dirty work is done. And so the term deck plate leader, at least to me, is that leader that's willing to get down there in the bilge, down there at the bottom at the deck plate, and be down there with the junior members that are typically doing the dirty work.
Yeah. So you wouldn't give a task to someone that you wouldn't do yourself, and you're just leading alongside them, is
Absolutely,
from what I understand.
Yes. I the term leader to me is lead means to be in front. And so if I'm going to ask somebody to do it, I got to be willing to go down there and do it with them.
Right. So kind of leading by example, would you say?
Exactly, yes.
So how would you say that your leadership style kind of differs from other leaders, and what makes your leadership style unique?
I think it's unique because of some of my life experiences, the way I was raised. My dad was a social worker for 50 years. My mom was a nurse, so taking care of people was kind of ingrained in me. And mm-hmm. so once I became a leader, I really focused on taking care of everybody and kind of empathizing with them, even those that had missteps. I still realized that most of the time it was your junior really goes out and gets a DUI or something like that. We have to hold them accountable, but we also have to set them up for future success. And so I think that's what sets me apart from some of my peers is I'm willing to go the extra mile for the members. I'm willing to, get in there and really help them and go beyond even them and help their family as well.
Right. What would you say your top leadership qualities are or the main things that you try to focus on? So from my understanding, it's taking care of the people that you lead and
in
their personal and professional lives, because if they're not okay personally, then they can't serve the mission.
Correct.
So what would you say some other qualities that you kind of focus on are?
I truly love my job. Yeah. To be honest with you, I can count on one hand the days that I did not want to go to work, and that was usually because I had to ruin somebody's day or career. Like, I knew it was going to be one of those tough conversations. And so I love trying to spread the enthusiasm. Every job becomes monotonous. I'm sure there's a Navy SEAL that gets bored of his day. helicopter rescue swimmers get bored of their day, even though they have the coolest job. It's spreading that enthusiasm and letting people know how cool their job really is. One thing I tell people is every time they go flying, somebody stops their car or on the beach and takes a picture of them. And not a lot of people can say they have a job where every time they're performing their mission, somebody is so blown away that they pull their phone out or their camera and take a picture. So I think one thing that has really helped me as a leader is I truly enjoy this job. I'm not just doing it for the paycheck. I enjoy the job. And I enjoy seeing the successes that people have coming back from their first search and rescue case, winning an award, earning a degree on the Coast Guard's dime, stuff like that. I really think that's kind of what sets me apart and has made me excel as a leader. I really do care, and I just love the job.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because throughout my short career in the Air Force so far, we kind of talk about empowering our airmen by letting them know what their purpose is in the mission and making them feel like they're important with even the smallest tasks.
Yes.
And I really like how you said that you like to make them excited too. So know their purpose, but then they're so excited to do those small tasks because they're contributing to the bigger mission and they are cool. So I want to talk a little bit about, you said you're a deck plate leader and you lead from the front and you lead by example. What are some things that you do to improve yourself so that you can be the best leader that you can be and set the best example?
I call it professional curiosity.
Sure.
You can have personal curiosity as well, right? But professional curiosity, wanting to know how things work, how to make them better, and also to better myself. While I was here, I earned my bachelor's degree. I've earned my airframe and power plant certification from the FAA prior to that. And so I never stopped learning. And so I think that's one thing that really, is important to keep me going, is to not just get into that rut and just sit there and make the day monotonous, is continue to try improving myself and also letting the junior folks know that it's never too late. I tell a lot of people, don't be like me. Don't be an E9 working, late night hours with two young kids trying to finish a degree. Get it now while you're young and don't have kids. And so I think that's another good, thing that keeps me going.
Right. With all the resources that the military offers too, just being able to support your education and all the professional military education and all those things, taking advantage of that is a great way just to improve as a leader and as a we would say airman, but Coast
right.
Guardsman.
Absolutely. It is amazing. Even the Coast Guard, we can use some of the DOD resources, but the Coast Guard has, tuition assistance. I earned my degree while in the Coast Guard, so my GI Bill is going to go to my kids.
Right.
We now have CG Cool, which the Air Force has had Cool, I think, for a while, credentialing, mm-hmm. where the Coast Guard will pay for me to get credentials that make me better at my job. And so I think it's imperative that our airmen, which are our E3 and below in aviation, but all of our Coasties, take advantage of these. Do it now while we're young, so you can take advantage of it when it's time to leave the Coast Guard.
Sure.
I think to be a leader, you need to look back at those that you were impressed with as leaders and those that were not good leaders.
Right.
We learn a lot from the people we don't want to be. Mm-hmm. And so I have been blessed to work with some of the best leaders in the Coast Guard, and I've worked for some that were considered the best leaders by the entire Coast Guard. Admiral Currier, the late Admiral Currier, was my CO in Miami. I ran into him 3 years later. He remembered my name, knew that I was on the helicopter side, even though he was on the Falcon jet at the time. So I tried to model myself after those that really stood out to me as a junior person, trying to learn people's names. Like I do, we have 187 men and women at the air station, and I've done my best to try and learn every one of their names. When I see them, call them by their first names, because I remember leaders that did that, and it just blew me away, and I thought it meant a lot. So, like I said, I don't read a lot of leadership books necessarily. There's some really good inspirational people out there that give you tips on how to lead and how to become a comfortable leader, but I think it's trial by fire as well.
Right.
One leadership rule that does stand out to me, and I hope I get this right, it's the platinum rule instead of the golden rule. The golden rule is treat others as they want to be treated,
right.
Or as you would want others to treat you. The platinum rule, treat others as they want to be treated. So everybody's different. Some people want a long-winded explanation. Other people just want you to tell them what to do and let them go do it. And mm-hmm. so learning how to read each person and their personality and treat them the way that they want to be treated was one thing I took away. I learned that during the Senior Enlisted Leadership course in New London. I can't recall what book or it came from, but I do recall that. That really stood out to me.
So you talked a little bit about mentorship and how you took inspiration from the good leaders that you had and learned what not to do from the bad leaders that you had.
Yes.
Can you kind of talk about the importance of mentorship, how it shaped you to the leader that you are today, and maybe the specific mentor that you mentioned and an example of how they kind of shaped the kind of leader you are today?
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of mentors that want to help you get where you want to be,
right.
Not where they think you should go or where the organization tells you should go.
Yeah.
We have these cadets that come by every week during the summertime to check out the air station. That's one of the things I always brief them is through their officer career, mm-hmm. find a mentor that wants to help them get where they want to be. And if in 5 years they want to leave the Coast Guard, find that mentor that helps them leave the Coast Guard successfully. The mentors that stood out to me early on becoming a mechanic, there's two of them, Jimmy Portock and Jeff Brandt. I still keep up with Jeff Brandt, but I've lost touch with Jimmy Portock. But they were the type of mechanics that gave me the tough jobs, even though I'd never done it, kind of hands off, and were just there if I messed it up. They would let me make a mistake, teach me how to fix that mistake, and really made me the mechanic that I became. And I became a good mechanic. I was blessed to be recognized a couple of times through my career. And they mentored me into enjoying the hard parts of being a mechanic. Some people shy away from the hard jobs, the tougher jobs, fixing helicopters or airplanes. I always gravitated towards the tougher job. Maybe going back towards that, technical curiosity or something like that. And then as I became a leader, there's been a couple mentors, quite a few that I followed. I had one when I was the leading chief in Port Angeles, Master Chief James Murray, who's getting ready to take a Command Master Chief job in Savannah. He took over as Command Master Chief, and even though I was an E8 and I didn't really belong in the room with the command, he made it a point to invite me to every command brief. If we were having personnel issues, he allowed me to sit in on them and ask my input. And so that mentored me. So when I took this job over, I was able to already be comfortable in sitting with an 06 and telling him, no, you're wrong, or this is the way we need to go, and this is how we take care of the people. And I think mentoring people so they're comfortable taking on that next role. The Coast Guard's not great, as good as the Air Force with leadership development. So there's no Air Station Command Master Chief course. And so I made E9. I got orders to be the Command Master Chief of one of the larger air stations in the Coast Guard, and I'd never been to training to help me do that. So, Master Chief Murray mentored me in the form of getting me comfortable for that. And I've had many other ones, throughout my career that have, helped me get into, school. And mentors don't have to be senior to you. I had a junior member as I was a chief in Corpus Christi, heard me talking about wanting to start school, but, tuition assistance is a pain in the butt. And one day he said, Chief, come here. And he was going through school, and he sat down and helped me walk me through my tuition assistance application and picking my university. And this E4, I was an E7. This E4 is the reason I started school and now have a degree. So it just took that person to mentor me through that one simple step. So mentors come in a lot of places. I'm sure I left people off, and if they're listening to this, I guess I got to give a shout out to my commanding officer, who I'm sure is going to listen to this. But mentors come in a lot of different ways, right. And I hope I've been able to mentor folks along the way. I think I have, but,
Yeah, I love how you said help them get to where they want to be.
Yes.
And not just try to keep them in the military or try to make them take this specific career path because that's what you took and it worked for you. Exactly. I really do appreciate you saying that. I'm not sure that a lot of people are even conscious that they are trying to lead people to where they want them to be.
Absolutely.
So I thought that was really interesting. And then also just the way that your mentors gave you a seat at the table while they're mentoring you and allowed you to be in those leadership positions before you were in those positions and listen and ask for your feedback too. And I think that's so interesting that some leaders may not realize that they should be asking the people that they're leading for their feedback on their own leadership skill, on a certain topic that they're trying to discuss and solve.
Absolutely.
So I think that's really interesting, and I appreciate that you were given that opportunity because you didn't have that leadership school as an E9, so
right.
You learned from your mentors, and I think that goes for every branch in the military. It's a good opportunity that we can be mindful of.
Yes.
So kind of on a similar note, do you remember a moment maybe in your junior enlisted career or when you were maybe a younger Coast Guardsman that really shaped who you are today? Maybe it was a time that you messed up and you learned a good lesson or someone taught you a great lesson. Can you think of a moment like that?
I can think of a lot of moments that either, humbled me
right.
or, mistakes I've made, being able to overcome mistakes. I made a really bad maintenance error my last day at Air Station Miami, my first tour. I left a part out of a tail rotor, and that aircraft went flying. Luckily, the aircraft came back, and it showed signs of wear, and they realized I left this part out. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of reasons that was left out. We practiced maintenance resource management, and you really peel back the onion. I made the mistake, but I was getting ready to move. There was a missing part in the maintenance procedure card and all that stuff. But the fact that I wasn't lambasted for it, right? Nobody, I messed up. Mm-hmm. I owned up to it. My maintenance warrant, kind of read me the riot act of, paying attention in this and that. But with that being said, the Coast Guard allowed me to continue to grow. I learned from it. I shared that. I wasn't going to hide from the fact that I made that mistake. And so that kind of showed me that the Coast Guard will allow you to make the mistake, as I'm sure the Air Force and the other services will if you own up to it. Another time that really stood out, and like I said earlier, San Francisco is where I realized the Coast Guard is where I wanted my career to be. I worked for a chief in Miami, my first tour that became the leading chief there, Master Chief Rindlichbacher. We called him R-12 because his name was too long. Mm-hmm. I'd gotten to San Francisco shortly thereafter, and he approached me, and I was an E5, and he asked me if I wanted to be the night check quality assurance, which is typically reserved for an E6. I was nervous but very prideful. I'd worked for him. He knew that I was capable of it. And he assigned the shop supervisor, a pretty strong one, to make sure that, because I had E6s that were going to ask me to QA their work. And that's when I realized that I had a place in the organization. And that's where I first became kind of a leader and was able to to have that impact and realized how much I just really enjoyed being a mechanic. And this is what I'm going to do. This Coast Guard is, I'm here to stay.
Yeah. And it's inspiring that I know that I've made a few mistakes in my career so
Absolutely.
Far. And every junior enlisted member and NCO is going to make those mistakes.
Absolutely. Yes.
And it gets discouraging and it makes you feel like you're just doing everything wrong and you're not going to succeed in your career, but you succeeded very well in your career and you've made those mistakes. So it's good to know that you could learn from those mistakes and that the Coast Guard does allow you to mess up. The Air Force does allow you to mess up and they support you. So in your position now as the Command Master Chief, you kind of focus on mental health and resiliency.
Yes.
Was there such a focus on that when you first started in the Coast Guard? Would you say that that's something that would be on a priority on a lot of commanders' lists?
When I joined, no, not at all.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about being readiness, but that was just showing up to work on time. So, you know, with mental health and resiliency, and I think the DOD and the Coast Guard still trying to learn where mental health and resiliency kind of meets. And I'm watching it change almost daily. We just started a new program in the Coast Guard. Coast Guard starting it. I'd like to say that our station's kind of leading the fleet with it right now. That is starting to kind of focus in on a unit-wide mission of resiliency, taking resiliency days and all that, and stuff like that. When I first joined, there really was no like critical incident stress management. So if you were involved or witnessed a mishap, they were kind of like, "Oh man, that sucks," and you know, get back out there, cowboy. These days, we really take a pause and we make sure that they are doing okay, and that's really important to me. Suicide awareness, suicide continues to be an issue, you know, in the service with our veterans. We are finally really making it a priority to kind of see how to make a unit, how to make leaders, and how to make personnel that we work with, you know, able to see the signs and help our shipmates, but also not be afraid to raise their hand up.
Right.
Aviation especially, we've always suffered with aviators, especially in the pilot world, being afraid to raise their hand and saying, I'm struggling mentally because they may be grounded, and that's their livelihood. I loved flying before. I can't fly in this position anymore, but I loved flying in the helicopter and hoisting. So sure, I didn't, you know, bring up issues I was having with my shoulder or my back or something like that. We're trying to finally focus and say it's okay to be grounded. It's okay to take care of yourself mentally, because it's more important for you to be ready, you know, down the road than right now. And so we still got a lot of work to do. The Coast Guard's trying to figure out ways to either change policy, the way we do things, to improve people's willingness to put their hand up.
Right.
I talked about being deck plate leader earlier. I'm not afraid to admit that I use Telemine, which is a, you know, mental health, you know, phone thing. You know, I have a counselor I talk to every couple of weeks. It's a little bit of it's a prophylactic. It helps me stay on my even keel. I'm retiring. I truly take work home. So I have a lot of stresses, and I needed a venue. And so trying to get people to realize it's okay to talk to somebody that's not your spouse, that's not your best friend. We're getting better. 27 years ago when I first joined, no E9 would say that they were seeking mental health help, right? And I think it's important, more and more are. And so I think it's important that we just continue to change that and make it to where it's not a bad thing to throw your hand up. I hate the term throwing the towel, because in boxing that means you quit.
Yeah.
It's not throwing in the towel. It's just taking a pause, right? The bell rang, you're going to go sit on the bench for a couple seconds, take a breath, you know, get things back the way you need to, and then get back in the game. And a lot of times you come back stronger. I've been blessed in this position to see multiple people on our hangar decks that have put their hand up, and they have grounded themselves for 3-6 months. But when they came back stronger, you know, as a family man and as a Coastie. So it is definitely, back to your question, it has changed a lot and for the better.
Right. And staying proactive with it too, just don't seek help or raise your hand if you're hit rock bottom and you just absolutely need help. Just stay proactive, and that makes you a good leader and makes you a good service member, because you're able to serve the mission when you're okay mentally and when you're strong mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, all the different fitness ways.
Yes.
So if you could go back in time, let's say to when you were a junior enlisted, or any of our listeners who were to start in their career, what piece of advice would you give him if you could, say, a couple things.
If back to my junior time, what advice? That's a great question.
If you could talk to him 27 years ago,
if maybe. I could talk to me 27 years ago, I have the benefit of, you know, looking backwards and saying don't change a thing, because, I mean, I'm 89. I'm retiring as a command master chief at the best air station in the Coast Guard. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, maybe don't judge your career or what your career is going to be like based on one day. We're all going to have bad days. Mm-hmm. There's always another unit around the corner. Surround yourself by good people, right? I've seen a lot of people in my career get in trouble just because they were surrounded by the wrong people. But man, you threw me a tough question on that one. My brain's going 1,000 places. But
Share anything that you could think
yeah.
of.
Yeah, I don't know. Just have fun with it.
Right.
And if it's not fun, ask why. Mm-hmm. Or go to your supervisor and tell them it's not fun and see if they can help you find it being fun. I mean, when I say I can kind of one hand days that I didn't want to go to work, that doesn't mean that I didn't have 20, 30, 40 rough, long days.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, I realized, like, man, this is a cool career. This is a fun job. Today's not going to define the rest of my career. So stick with it and do what you want to do. I didn't know anything about aviation at all. Helicopter landed on the boat, and I said I wanted to do that, and I went for it. So I want people to wait and go the rate or the job that they want to go. I've seen people that went a rate just because it was the quickest one to go to school to get out of the unit they're at. You're never going to be happy if you just went your job just to get away from a unit. You know, I waited a year and a half on a boat, chipping paint, even though it was an assault environment, you know, repainting the same thing every patrol. But the wait was worth it because I got to fly in helicopters. I got to rescue people, save lives, and now be here as a command master chief. And so it worked out great. So yeah. I hope that answered your question.
It did. That was a great answer.
That was a tough one.
Thank you. And along the way, you met your wife in the Coast Guard.
I did,
She's also in the Coast Guard.
Yes.
And you have two children.
We do, yes.
I also grew up, both my parents are in the Air National Guard, so I had mill-to-mill parents. It's very rewarding. I'm so happy that I grew up the way that I did. But I'm sure it was hard to balance it all throughout your career. So what's your advice on how to balance every aspect of your life with your wife who's also in the military and as you're traveling all about?
First, I would say communicate, right? You know, mill-to-mill parents or, you know, co-located parents, you know, we have busy schedules, and so you got to communicate how that works. But also communicate with your supervisors, your leaders, on what you may need. We have at the air station multiple, you know, member-to-member families, and so some of them come in maybe 15 minutes late, stay 15 minutes late just so they can do the child care handoff. But communicate with the spouse, you know, I think is one of the biggest things. I was kind of lucky because the units that my wife was at weren't large cutters that were gone for 6 months at a time to where I had to figure out how to balance the single parent thing for a long period of time. She was on a cutter that was gone 2 to 3 weeks at a time. But you know, then when she was back, you know, there was a lot of downtime, so we trade off, and then I could focus back on my career. But communicate, you know, both of us, you know, she was a leader, she was a senior chief, she was running her own units, and so trying to find that balance also of respecting each other's positions and careers and not focusing mine's more important than hers or vice versa. And those were conversations we had. Yeah. Another thing we did is we made a rule early on that Coast Guard conversations end at the threshold of the bedroom, right?
Nice.
Once you go into the bedroom, stop talking work. It's time to talk family. It's time to watch TV. It's time to unwind. And I think that's important as well. Mill-to-mill parents, that could sometimes be all they had to talk about, especially she was a bosun's mate, so she worked on boats, and I worked on helicopters, so there wasn't a lot of commonality. But with that being said, if you have, you know, both on helicopters or both on boats, it could really just run the life. And so I think it's important to focus on the family and not the service when you have, you know, mill-to-mill parents, to be able to juggle that. And also, you know, like I said, communicate with the supervisors on what your need is, because it's much more demanding than having a spouse that may work from home or work part-time.
Right. just asking for that help and for that support rather than just trying to tough it out, because you're not only missing out, your family is too. So
absolutely,
so being their voice as well. I really like that piece of advice.
Yes.
So you've been in for 27 years.
Yes.
And I'm sure that you've had many different experiences, and I'd like to know if you've ever kind of experienced doubt or imposter syndrome, and kind of how you dealt with that. Maybe feeling like you didn't deserve a seat at the table, or maybe you're in a new position and you weren't sure if you were ready, or even when you're younger, junior enlisted, just doubting your capabilities. How did you kind of deal with that and persevere through?
Absolutely. I would say I suffer from that quite often, and I think I still do. Oh. I sometimes still look around my office or look out the window and say, how did I get here? What am I doing here, right? Yeah. I still sometimes relate to myself more as the E4 mechanic than the command master chief. But I think, one, having the confidence that the service put you there for a reason. Mm-hmm. We all have syllabuses. We have supervisors that need to sign off certain things to allow us to advance into those positions, and trust that your command would not put you in that position if they didn't think you could fill it. Also, understanding that you're going to make mistakes and being, you know, learning from those mistakes. Also having those mentors. You know, I mentioned the mentor earlier that brought me to the table early, you know, let me know that I did belong there and got comfortable. And then one other kind of much more low-key statement that some people say is fake it till you make it.
Right.
Right? And that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? Go in there like you own it. Learn from your mistakes. And so I do suffer from that sometimes, and I do even as the command master, you sometimes, you know, wonder if I'm bringing the right value to the table. At the end of the day, I know I am, but it can sometimes be difficult, especially when I still feel like some days I just joined the Coast Guard yesterday, you know,
right.
And it's a testament to how awesome the job's been. It's gone by so quick. Just have confidence in your abilities, have confidence in the training that the service provided you, and also have confidence that your supervisors and your mentors put you there. And so
right.
They wouldn't have put you there if they didn't think you were ready to be there. So.
Right. It's about building your own confidence, from my understanding,
yes.
And faking till you make it. If you fake
yes.
confident, then you'll be confident.
True.
And then also as a mentor, helping the people that you're mentoring or leading be confident in building their confidence.
Yes.
By giving them a seat at a table or asking for their feedback or giving them good and bad feedback so they know where to grow and what they're doing well. So
absolutely.
I think that's all really important too.
My commanding officer, Captain Potter, he always says feedback's a gift. We do Toastmasters, which is run by Ellie Russo, mm-hmm. And we always do the feedback part of the public speaking, and he just says feedback is a gift, and that is so true. You're never going to get better at that seat at the table. You're never going to lose that imposter syndrome if everybody always tells you, you know, doesn't give you any feedback on how to improve yourself. So
right. And then I also kind of want to talk about, through your career, you've experienced doubt. I'm sure you experienced difficult people,
yes.
or other service members that you don't see eye to eye on and you've had to work with.
Yes.
You've been all over, met many different people. I'm sure you've worked with many different people. How do you kind of deal with difficult people and learn how to work with people that you don't agree with, or you have different solutions for certain things, you just don't think the same way?
Right.
How do you go about that?
One of the cool things about joining the military is we all come from different places. None of us come from the same place, whether it's from the ghetto, from the farm, or anything in between. And so we have all these different, you know, life experiences that come together. So the way we handle situations is going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
The best way to handle tough people is to try and find that common ground. I've worked with plenty of people that I may not go out and have a beer with, but I'll work with.
Right.
And so trying to learn how, you know, you shouldn't always be the one that, you know, that backs away from that situation, but learn how to communicate with those people. If it's just personality conflicts, now if it goes into different situations such as bullying or harassing and something, that's a whole different story.
Right.
Right. And that's when it's to speak up, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody's a bystander, but just difficult people that don't have the same personality, they may be thinking the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I have openly told people before that I'm struggling to communicate with you. We need to find a common balance. And sometimes it's amazing how that opens that up. And,
right.
You know, it's an awkward conversation to have. Not a lot of people willing to have, but you gotta find that common boundary. Because at the end of the day, we're all in the fight together.
Mm-hmm.
you could be in a dark and stormy in a helicopter and you may not like the pilot that's at the controls, but you better find a way to find that common ground, or else, you know, bad things can happen. Same with the battlefield, same with, you know, air combat, you know, in the Air Force. You just got to learn to find that common ground, you know, be the bigger person if that person's not being the bigger person, and just communicate the best you can. And then there are times that you just cannot do that, and you may need some type of intervention from a supervisor or something like that to help you all find that common ground.
Right. So instead of just keep on trying to work with them and getting more aggravated, just communicating, hey, I'm having a hard time communicating with you. How can we work through this?
Absolutely.
And that uncomfortable conversation could really just fix your problem and get you to be able to work together.
Absolutely.
So you're getting ready to retire.
Yes.
In a couple weeks. Do you have any retirement plans? What's next for you?
Shortly after I retire, we're going to go do camping. We have a camper that we love to use. So we're going to go to,
nice.
We have a spot up in Bar Harbor that we go to every year. And then mm-hmm. we're going to go over the border into Canada, and we're going to go up to Prince Edward Island, I think it is.
Okay.
Yes. And kind of explore, relax. I'm going to try a beard and see what that feels like.
I haven't had one of those in a long time.
I've never had one. When I joined the Coast Guard, we did a shave contest in my cutter, and I won the Richie Cunningham Award because after a week, I didn't have a beard.
Yeah.
And so now I can grow one. I don't know what it looks like, though, so my wife, after a couple of days, may say shave it off, but
we'll
see.
See what it looks like.
I'm going to take a deep breath, work on some hobbies, find a job. I've got a couple things that I'm interested in. I don't feel comfortable talking about them right now publicly, but I'm interested in finding a way to maybe teach or mentor.
Yeah.
I've been blessed to use what we talked earlier about, using tuition assistance and CG Cool and all that. I've got a lot of aviation credentials that mm-hmm. make me quite marketable, and so it's probably going to be something in aviation. I just don't know exactly what direction.
Right.
And so luckily it's a good time to be in the market, and I'm blessed to be set up to where I don't have to rush. So a shorter way to answer your question is I'm just going to chill for a little bit and kind of
get
back
breath.
To being dad and husband and Jacob.
Right. I appreciate you're able to travel and go to Canada and continuing to learn and continuing to mentor and to lead. And I think that's very inspiring that you want to continue that even out of the military.
Absolutely.
Is there anything else you want to talk about today? Anything? Any last words that you'd like to impart?
Well, I think one thing I want to point out, maybe for the more local listeners to the Cape Cod area, one thing that blew me away when I got here was the support services, military support services.
Yes.
A lot of Coast Guard bases are small, kind of on an island, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, you know, some of them are the size of probably an Air Force GSE hangar, you know, and so there's not a lot of support services. And I get here, and I was blown away by the amount of support there is here on Cape for the military families. You know, I'm going to stay away from naming one or two of them just because some of them are near and dear to my heart, but I don't want to single any out.
Right.
But I was just blown away. So I encourage those listening, if you need help financially, spiritually, mentally, or something like that, you're in the right place. There's a lot of great places on here. Go find your Command Master Chief, or in the Air Force, your First Shirt. I think you all call them First Shirts.
Yes.
Right? And ask them for help, and ask them whether it's monetarily, whether it's food, whether it's childcare stuff. There are so many people here on Cape that are just itching to help their service members. And that's something I never saw until I got here, and it just, you know, blew me away. So thanks for giving me the opportunity, like one final parting shot, to just say thanks to all of those organizations out there. If they listen, I think they'll know who they are.
Right.
But I do. There's one that I look forward to paying it forward with once I retire and continue to work with, to just be there, because they were there for me and my family, helped me lead some of my shipmates there at the air station. And so my way is to pay it forward is being a part of one or two of those organizations and helping them continue to serve our folks. So thanks for giving me that last chance to kind
of
name drop a little bit, even though I didn't drop names.
So. No, we all know what they are.
Right.
And encouraging enlisted members to not be afraid to ask for help.
Absolutely.
I think that's a great takeaway from this episode.
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me and to come travel to the 102nd to have this conversation.
Absolutely.
And congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. This was a great experience. Thank you.